You are listening to the Heart of Tradition podcast. Hello, everyone. Thinking today about magnesium and brain inflammation, mental health. You can read a lot of studies about this. If you type magnesium, brain, PubMed, you know, you'll find tons of stuff. But what I try to do on this podcast is sometimes we'll go a little bit in detail and we'll get real gritty and I'll look up and write an article and then podcast about it and, you know, spend some time to pull up sources and things like that. But a lot of the times what's needed is kind of like a street level understanding of how this thing works. And so if we understand the flexibilizing, I know that's not a word, but whatever. If we understand the flexibilizing properties of magnesium, how this is one of its key ways to understand magnesium is through the flexibility and through how that flexibility is manifest in all the tissues of the human body, from the bones to the nerves to the brain, any tissue, blood-brain barrier, all of it, right? Every single part is controlled by magnesium. It's the structure that needs a certain flexibility in itself, in the muscle, in the bone, in the tissue, in the tooth, for example, and then that elasticity that's offered by the, I guess you could say, the flexibility of this mineral and how it brings about, I guess you could say, like with the teeth, for example, if they were just calcium, they'd be brittle, right? And so with the magnesium, there's a flexible agent there. And so that flexibility allows for the teeth to breathe. It allows for oxygenation to happen. It allows for structures to offload and, you know, upload and download, you could say, oxygen to the body, how the platelets are formed, how the hemoglobin is formed, the discocytes are formed, like how they're shaped and how sigmoidal they are, or how round and sticky they are, or how, you know, not sticky enough, or this whole kind of combination where you get this thing right here is magnesium driven, not only in the structure, but even in the viscosity. So the viscosity also is part of how magnesium works. It's like they call it the food of the nerves. So when we think about magnesium in the brain and we think about the nervous system in general, you know, what do we call it? Neuroinflammation, neurodegeneration. So these are nerves that we're pointing to, and magnesium is the food of the nerves. It also is the structure of the nerves. Unlike CBD, it provides structure to the nerve over time. And so we have a long-term game, boring, but we got to get on it. We got to do this for 7 years and heal the whole totality of the body. So they want us to piecemeal our way through the magnesium deficiency so we never figure this 7-year paradigm out or the abundance needed to pull it off. And the abundance can't be had through pills, because the pills, you can never get abundant enough without harming the kidney, as far as the dose goes, as far as surface area goes, and as far as the waters of history and the ocean teach us. That's the biggest surface area right there, to go out in the ocean. So, you know, we all know about the hormone side of magnesium and how that helps the brain. We know about how it helps the brain to process sugar. It's a precursor in all these hormones, but it also is like the B vitamins, in a sense, is it helps to process sugar, makes the sugar easier for the body to use. And so that creates better concentration, focus, other things in the brain. And also, you know, there's degeneration that happens when sugar's in the brain. That's one of the main functions of insulin, is to keep the brain from getting too much sugar. And so trying to, you know, understand this flexible mineral and what it does, so we can figure out how to heal our brain. Now, there's other things we need for the brain, of course. We don't need aluminum for the brain. Magnesium is the enemy of aluminum in the human body as well. I mean, as far as when it teams up with enzymes like acid malate and malic acid, sorry, and forms magnesium malate. And you know, these ammonia principles that get in and start to break down the aluminum. Some of this stuff is really hard to reach. It's really deep in the organs. We get these, you know, things happening to us when we're 5, 3, 2 months old. I mean, like, so quickly things happen now, and so many interventions that we get in so much trouble. So just trying to, like, help people see the importance of magnesium for the brain. This whole threonate controversy is ridiculous, because what they don't tell you about all these molecules like threonate, citrate, and glycinate, these are all ways to sell people pills. Now, as soon as you go through the C, it's the chloride molecule. That's it. And the chloride is turned into those things in the body. We already know that all the threonates and citrates and glycinates, those are all, you know, L forms of molecules that are actually made by the body. So the body will acidify just like we do with our external pill production factories. The brain will also, or the body will also acidify the magnesium as it comes into the body and bring acids and fats and things to bear on that molecule to where it's more assimilatable. I know that's not a word, but whatever. So the body's automatically doing this, you know. So we don't have to worry about, is the magnesium getting in the brain, because if we don't have threonate, because they marketed it that way. It's like the body, there's what the science does not want you to figure out, that the body is, the brain, the body, the cell itself in general is selectively permeable. So this means that it can take in all sorts of things that we don't think it takes in. From light to food to media to everything else, it takes this stuff in. So it also takes in magnesium. That's why, unlike CBD, which we're not against CBD, we're just, because they work really good in synergy, but just not alone per se without magnesium, as far as we see it. But, you know, the magnesium, you know, it helps to build up the tissues, and over time it brings structure. And so the structure is important, because it's that structure over time that becomes less inflammatory, more capable of flexibility, therefore less cracky, I guess you could say. It doesn't crack like skin would crack. And so that's what happens. These barriers start to crack because they're not flexible enough. And so magnesium needs to be all throughout the whole system at a high dose. And, you know, blood tests don't help. They only 1% of magnesium's in the blood. It's only a mirror for pathology, but it goes nowhere near what optimal means. And, you know, you'd have to have like about 7 different types of tests to test your magnesium structure deficiency, right? Through all your bones and nerves and teeth. I mean, it's not just a simple thing like that. And so that's just almost a stop think, the blood test, because you're like, oh, cool, I'm good. No, you're not. Oh, I don't feel anything when I take this. Doesn't matter. It's not about feeling it. That's why the Greeks and Romans built this into their culture, because you weren't supposed to always feel everything. You just stick with it. And what happens is it changes the body over time. Certain things take wisdom, you know. Like, we don't feel everything in this world. You know, we don't feel like playing scales, but that's how we learn to compose an opera, right? Like, or it doesn't feel good, or it doesn't, you know. So it's not always about that. It's about, you know, understanding these things are a need, seeing their deficiency so widespread and so almost epidemic that we start to realize we need this. You don't have to wait for a study. You can just study the world and study history. So yeah, so it's not just threonate that gets into your brain. You know, you can use the chloride on the brain. You can go through the Dead Sea and it'll soak through your brain too. Like, all this stuff gets in the body. The salt doesn't, or you would die, and that's why we have skin, because it filters out certain things, but not everything. So it knows what it's doing. You know, it probably takes in some of the salt fractions too. Like, it knows exactly what it's doing, which is mind-blowing to us, because we think the skin is like dead. So anyway, so this was just a little baby podcast, but just trying to help people, you know, not miss this one connection here, because it's a strong one. And, you know, it also helps with serotonin production and melatonin production, and so better sleep and better recovery. And it's also the mineral opposed to calcium, in the sense that it relaxes and calcium contracts. So just think about the relaxation part of this and how that works for the mind. So, yeah, so word means something when it's big, and it means something when it's at the very smallest cell. It's the same word. So magnesium has all that in it. Maybe that's why it's called magnesium. Because, you know, magna, like everything, like all good, you know, widespread, magnificent, you know, like it's everywhere. And then, I don't know, we could talk about therapies that are separate from that, but, some very interesting therapies for people that they might not know about. I found one that's really cool called ETT. And it's an emotional, what is it called? What does the ETT stand for? Emotional Transformation Therapy. And they use lights and colors and strobing colors and shot into different parts of the eyes to help heal neuroplasticity and change and make new brain patterns as we talk through our trauma, or like DBT, or our resourcing, you know, if we're trying to build up the person, the edification, or if we're trying to work out trauma like EMDR, there's protocols for that. But so it's just like talk therapy on crack. So it just speeds the whole thing up and allows for a quicker handle on some of your issues, which is very powerful. I do think you have to get to a certain stage to even do ETT, but I could be wrong because I'm not a practitioner. But I would think if you're still in the dungeon trying to work out some of the deeper bonding with the inner infant, you know, from the crib back down to inner child, and all these deeper stages that people have to go through to heal all parts and bring consciousness to all parts, then maybe ETT would be at a certain stage in that process. That's the way I see it. At least that's how it was for me. And so, like, I feel like it works better when you're kind of standing on the ground a little bit. And I just love the fact that they use wands, you know, like color wands, and they have all these like different things that they use. And it's so Austin-y and like so hippie, but like it's really cool, actually. It's like magic and therapy combined. And I love that, because that usually fails, but every once in a while it doesn't, right? And that's what makes that so cool, is when it doesn't fail. That's why we're always seeking it out, all the failure versions, because sometimes that's exactly what has to happen. And it's funny because it stimulates the brain to, like REM sleep, it kind of stimulates the bilateral to where it builds the corpus callosum and the part of the brain that connects the two hemispheres, and kind of, you know, that's probably the nature of healing too, is just to connect those two pieces there. Connect the spirit first and foremost, but then that on the secondary plane. So, yeah, move from a duality into a trinity, basically. Wow, that's cool. I'll finish on that. That was great.